This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Fatal overseas disasters. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal. Along with Jennifer Koschenka, it is Thursday, January 19. Glad you could join us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
An avalanche following a series of earthquakes in central Italy has buried a mountain hotel. There are fatalities in Iran. A burning high-rise collapsed in Tehran, killing at least 45 firefighters.
From Washington, in his final news conference, President Obama avoids a question about House Democrats boycotting the Trump inauguration.
The man chosen to lead the EPA had a warning for the agency during his confirmation hearing yesterday.
And what to know when a debt collector starts calling you.
We hear from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that about a third of consumers have been contacted by some sort of a debt collector in the past year. And of those, it's more than a quarter who say that they felt threatened in some way by that debt collector's behavior.
Kelly Grant at CNBC.com on knowing your rights when a collection agency calls. Her guidance in about 20 minutes. Well, more natural disaster news from Italy today. A series of strong earthquakes, one of them registering as a 5.7, rocked central Italy yesterday. That's believed to have set off an avalanche that buried a hotel on a mountain. The Italian news agency says rescuers are reporting deaths. It's not clear how many, but authorities say at least 30 people were missing today. This is a developing story involving the Hotel Rigopiano. The Abruzzo region of the country is still recovering from a series of earthquakes and aftershocks in August that killed more than 200 people. President-elect Trump will reportedly nominate former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue to serve as Agriculture Secretary. He would be the final cabinet appointment. Mr. Perdue is a Republican who served on the Trump campaign's Agriculture Advisory Committee. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
If he is confirmed by the Senate, Mr. Perdue would take over one of the largest agencies in Washington with a budget of $164 billion. The Agriculture Department does things like ensure farmers' crops, promote agricultural exports, and inspect meat processing plants. Farmers will be watched closely because the past few years have been difficult. Incomes have fallen by nearly half since hitting record highs in 2013, thanks to enormous drops in the prices of corn, wheat, soybeans, and meat. With that has come a sharp decline in land prices as well. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. 9 minutes after the hour. President-elect Trump's cabinet picks this week are taking a tough line on certain issues, reflecting his anti-establishment agenda. The Wall Street Journal says that was not the case with some of last week's hearings. Meanwhile, Georgia Congressman Tom Price, the pick for Health and Human Services, drew sighs of relief when he commented about plans for repealing and replacing Obamacare.
Nobody's interested in pulling the rug out from under anybody. We believe that it's absolutely imperative that individuals that have health coverage be able to keep health coverage and move, hopefully, to greater choices and opportunities for them to gain the kind of coverage that they want for themselves and for their families.
Separately, Mr. Price faced criticism from Senator Elizabeth Warren, who wants to know whether he broke rules by trading health-related stocks while working on health care legislation.
Did you take additional actions after that date to advance your plan to help the company that you now own stock in?
I'm offended by the insinuation, Senator.
Also, Mr. Trump's pick to lead the EPA, Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt, testified yesterday that the agency made its own laws. He pointed out that the EPA is an administrative body, not a legislative body. In his final news conference before leaving office, President Obama weighed in on a number of issues, including his decision to commute the prison sentence of Chelsea Manning, the former Army intelligence analyst convicted of giving away classified government information.
I felt that in light of all the circumstances, that commuting her sentence was entirely appropriate.
Critics of the decision have argued it sends the wrong signal about the seriousness of illegally disclosing government secrets that put scores of lives at risk. Mr. Obama, separately, who has called for unity in the country following a bitter election fight, also declined to weigh in on the more than 60 House Democrats boycotting President-elect Trump's inauguration tomorrow.
I'm not going to comment on those issues. All I know is I'm going to be there. So is Michelle. And I have been checking the weather, and I'm heartened by the fact that it won't be as cold as my first inauguration, because that was cold.
He also said his White House has warned the incoming administration that President-elect Trump's planned move of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem could increase volatility in the Middle East. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
The news without the nonsense. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Welcome aboard a Thursday. Donald Trump's election in November put a new spotlight on working-class white voters who helped propel him to victory. But viewing Mr. Trump's voters through only that lens mischaracterizes his coalition and the challenges, too, that he faces. It's a story from Wall Street Journal data and politics reporter Dante Chinney. Dante, what have you found?
Well, what we've been talking about a lot since Donald Trump was elected is how he won with this coalition of rural white Americans. This is what we've spent a lot of time talking about in the media and trying to understand, I guess, how the polls got so much wrong. But the fact is, when you look closer at how he won, it's much more complicated than that. And Trump won voters making between $100,000 and $200,000 a year. He won white voters with a college education, not by as much as Mitt Romney did, but he still won them. And the, what I was trying to get at in the piece is understanding kind of the complexity of this coalition that Donald Trump used to win the White House. It's more than just kind of rural white voters who are struggling economically.
All right. Is that a story that perhaps some of the media were not willing to tell?
Well, I just think it's a little more complicated. I think the thing that's the most interesting when you look at what happened, how Trump won, is he really got the great turnout from these rural white areas. And look, I think that's a big story. But, you know, now that we're shifting from, winning the White House to actually governing, you've got to understand that the group of people that he wants to please, that he wants to make happy, people who put him in the White House, is much more complicated. And in the piece, I look at four different counties around the country. He won all of them by 16 points. And they kind of go to the point. They're radically different. Delaware County, Ohio, which is very wealthy and more than 50% with a bachelor's degree. Los Animas County in Colorado, which has a lot of Hispanics, far fewer bachelor's degrees, only 15%, and lower income. And Lee County in Mississippi, Pickens County in Iowa, both, lower bachelor degrees, much lower, and much lower incomes. He won all these places by 16 points. These are all Trump voters, these places. So, you know, they want and need different things, and that's something he's going to have to keep in mind as he starts to govern here.
All right, it's a complicated and diverse group, as you say. So what might the plan forward be to keep all these groups satisfied?
That's where it's going to get tricky. I do think some of the things that he's talked about, such as tariffs and trying to fight trade battles, some of that might go over very well in places like Lee County or Pickens County, but not over so well in Delaware County, where you've got a lot of whites with college education who have really done quite well in the global economy, thank you very much. And there are places like Los Animas County in Colorado, where it's really probably a lot of that vote is about immigration and how he handles that issue. And you know, the question is, how does he balance all those concerns? What he does to win over one group or to pacify or to make happy one group of his coalition may put another part of it off. This is a different kind of coalition than a Republican has won with before, and now we're going to see how he does this.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal data and politics reporter Dante Chinney about his story called Donald Trump Faces Balancing Act to Keep Winning Coalition Together. All right, so you point out, too, potentially divisive cultural conservative concerns such as gay marriage and abortion. What about on that front?
Right. So on gay marriage and abortion, you're talking about issues that would probably have a lot of resonance in the South where Donald Trump won, but not so much again. Look, when I looked at these places, some of these places where he won, like Delaware County, Ohio, these better educated kind of exurban counties that went for him, he won, but by less than Mitt Romney won them. So he still won them by a lot, but by less than Mitt Romney won them by. And, you know, these are places where those social issues do not play as well. And it's going to be tricky. Again, things he's going to do to kind of keep happy this, or to, you know, to reach out to, this evangelical part of his support, is not going to probably or possibly go as well with kind of upper-income, educated, ex-urban voters who also came out for him.
Thanks, Dante. Wall Street Journal data and politics reporter Dante Chinney. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Caught in a huge avalanche, plowed into a mountain hotel in central Italy after a series of strong earthquakes rattled the area, and up to 30 people might be buried under the snow. Rescue workers using flashlights battled blizzard conditions during the night to reach the isolated hotel on skis. They arrived to find most of the four-story structure submerged under a mountain of snow and debris. So far, only two survivors have been accounted for. President Obama used the final news conference of his presidency to deliver a hopeful message to a nation nervous about the looming change of power in Washington, saying, "At my core, I think we're going to be okay." He says he's spoken with President-elect Trump numerous times to help with the transition.
This is something I have told him. This is a job of such magnitude that you can't do it by yourself.
Obama began the news conference with praise for ailing former President George H.W. Bush and his wife, Barbara. In his last major speech before leaving office, Vice President Joe Biden says Russia is undermining the liberal world order in its quest for influence.
Injecting doubt and political agitation and democratic systems, strengthening illiberal factions and forces on both left and right to seek out and roll back the decades of progress from within our systems.
Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, Biden cited Iran and China among the greatest threats to democracies, but added that the movement is principally led by Russia. We have three inductees in the 2017 class of the Baseball Hall of Fame: Tim Raines, Jeff Bagwell, and Pudge Rodriguez, who's excited to follow in the footsteps of fellow catcher Johnny Bench.
I'm very happy and honored to say that I'm going to be right next to my favorite catcher growing up, my hero, Johnny Bench.
Rodriguez got in his first year of eligibility. And Vegemite, the salty spread beloved in Australia and only Australia, is going home. The spread and other grocery products are being sold by Illinois-based Mondelez to an Australian dairy company for $345 million. Mondelez, formerly Kraft Foods, says it's selling most of its grocery business in Australia and New Zealand to focus on Oreo cookies and Cadbury chocolate.
Do you ever have Vegemite?
Oreos and Cadbury sounds a whole lot better than that. I've heard that stuff is absolutely awful.
I've heard the same, but I've never had it, though.
Me either.
Yeah, well, our opportunity just got smaller, I guess. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Would you know what to do if a debt collector called you? You can start by knowing your rights. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau proposed new regulations in July that would require debt collectors to do more diligence to ensure they're collecting on a legit debt and cap their weekly attempts to reach a customer. Here's what you should know from Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Kelly, what should we keep in mind?
We hear from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that about a third of consumers have been contacted by some sort of a debt collector in the past year. And of those, it's more than a quarter who say that they felt threatened in some way by that debt collector's behavior. And it's really important to know that if you are contacted by a debt collector, you do have rights, and particularly if you feel threatened, you know, that's never something that's okay. There's a lot that you can do to really make sure that they're holding to what they need to do and not harassing you.
All right, what kind of threats might you encounter? Pay us or we'll come get you or something?
There can be all sorts of things. You know, the rules, when you look at what the FTC has really laid out on what debt collectors are supposed to do and what they're not allowed to do. They're not allowed to misrepresent who they are. They're not allowed to threaten you with particular things like legal action or that they're going to arrest you, you know, unless that is something that is within their power to do, which in most cases that's not going to be correct. And they're not allowed to just generally threaten, harass, and demean you.
All right. So knowing our rights involves what here?
Well, that's going to be the big first thing that you want to be aware of if you've received some sort of a phone call. Really look up the Federal Trade Commission. They have a plain language explainer that will give you a pretty good rundown of what debt collectors are allowed to do, what they're not allowed to do, and how you would go about essentially asserting your rights. And it's something that's important to know before you get that next phone call, and also as soon as you get that phone call, to let that debt collector know that you have read this, you understand your rights under all of these federal regulations.
All right, and what do you mean, too, by verify everything?
Well, a lot of the data that's out there, according to the CFPB, it's about half of the people who have been contacted about a debt in the past year say they were given some sort of inaccurate information about what they owed. It might be a wrong amount. It might be that you don't owe that debt, period. So you want to get some sense before you panic and think that you do really owe somebody money or that it's this amount of money. Ask them to send you details of that debt and really verify that everything is correct.
Mm. We're speaking with Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. She's also a certified financial planner. She's got a piece called Don't Panic When a Debt Collector Calls. You Have Rights. All right, another point you made here is take notes.
Yes, you want to log every contact from the collector, the number that they called, the time they called, the representative you spoke with, all of those details, because that's going to really help you if they are stepping outside of bounds. That's going to help you build a case against that, be able to file a complaint, but it also helps you keep track of, you know, who's contacting you in regards to what. There are a lot of scams that are out there, too, so that can help you sort out the legitimacy of people who are calling you.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Thursday, January 19. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Kashenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. At least 30 missing after an avalanche buried a mountain hotel in Italy following more earthquakes. A high-rise in Tehran collapsed in flames today, killing at least 75, including 45 Iranian firefighters. Original content apparently paying off for Netflix with 7 million new subscribers in the final quarter of last year. A Tennessee hunter may have set a record with a 47-point buck that he shot on Monday. No Clemens or Bonds for the baseball hall, and a dating site for singles who support Trump. That story in about 20 minutes. So what will be made of President Obama's legacy? What will he best be known for? USA Today national correspondent Rick Hampson tried to assess things by looking at the future of policies and programs while recalling where the nation's 44th president started from. Rick, what about that day 8 years
Gordon,
ago?
I think three things jumped out that I had more or less forgotten. One was how bad things were that day, economically mostly. Secondly, how bad people thought they were, which was not as bad as how bad they really were. And third, how bad they could have gotten. For instance, the economy, people knew the economy was shrinking at a rate of 6%. Not to get wonky on you, but that's the route to depression. Mm. In fact, in retrospect, when studies were done, it was 50% worse than that. It was shrinking at a 50% faster rate. So things could have gotten much worse. But most of the day, it seemed, I don't know about you, it was sort of a hopeful day, partly because of Obama's rhetoric and partly because a lot of people, including Republicans and conservatives, were on some level proud that America had elected the first African-American president.
Right. As you mentioned, too, on that note, there was optimism about this kind of post-racial, post-partisan era, which, I don't know, it didn't really materialize.
That didn't happen.
To say the
least. If you judge Obama on that, you'd say, well, the guy really, he had some problems. But if you say to yourself, if you go back to that day knowing what we know now and think about how bad the economy was and the potential for a financial crisis that would have kept escalating, I think in that sense, he gets much higher marks for what didn't happen.
And as you point out, too, I know early on in the piece, he was what I guess I had forgotten or didn't realize. He was the first to enter office during an economic crisis and wartime. Some others had done those things separately, but not together.
Correct. Never in American history. Nixon would have been the last incoming president in war during Vietnam, of course, and FDR inherited a financial crisis. Of course, one thing about FDR was that everyone knew it was a financial crisis. Everybody knew we were, as Hoover said, at the end of our rope. With Obama, it wasn't so apparent until really a period later when economists were able to look back and see how difficult things actually were.
I thought it was interesting, too, as you were kind of running through kind of the hour-by-hour, sort of minute-by-minute breakdown of that inauguration day for President Obama back in 2009. He even had to practice his salute a few times to make sure he got kind of those finer details correct.
And that reminds us, too, that he was going to become commander-in-chief of a nation with two active wars going on, 100,000 troops in the field. And again, that contrasts with the situation now. Obviously, ISIS is a big problem, and Obama has a lot to answer for. He can also legitimately claim that he essentially removed American troops from harm's way in those two countries.
We're speaking with Rick Hampson, national correspondent at USA Today. He's got an interesting piece about President Obama's legacy. The night before he delivers the inauguration address, before he's sworn in, we got overnight bombings in Baghdad. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. There were several bombings in Baghdad, one in an assassination in Mosul. It wasn't a big thing at the time, but if you just sort of stop and read through the news report, you see all the things that Obama's going to be facing. You know, this sort of constant drip of problems with terrorism. There have been some terrorists arrested in Spain, including a few Pakistanis. So you can see the seeds of what's coming that day that he's going to inherit as he goes through his office. Even as he's riding in his new limousine to the White House and up to the Capitol, they call it the Beast. It can run on flat tires. It can be sealed off in case of a chemical attack and so forth. The Beast is made by General Motors, which says they'll be out of money in 2 months.
Oh,
so he's surrounded by problems.
Wow, I'm looking at that the picture in your piece too of his speech. I forgot how cold it was that day. It had a brisk wind and made it feel like 17. I think there he is with no overcoat and also no gray hair.
That certainly changed, hasn't it?
Yeah. USA Today national correspondent Rick Hampson. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us, and a good Friday Eve to you. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you're ever in need of finding a needle in a haystack or maybe a wedding ring in a huge pile of trash, call on the experts in the New York Sanitation Department. CBS New York reports that a woman named Vicky Salzone woke up one morning to realize that her three diamond wedding rings had gone missing while she was putting away her Christmas decorations. Her husband, Joe, awoke after hearing the garbage truck outside and called the local sanitation department. Sanitation crew leader Ed Wiggins answered the call and recalled a similar incident in November in which another woman found her wedding rings among piles of garbage.
Didn't you do that story?
Yes,
you
I do recall story. Doing that story, and yeah. I remember Ed Wiggins, the guy who was in charge of the whole situation, so Ed's crew was on top of things. Using a system Wiggins and his team used to find lost items, and with the husband's help, they were able to identify the type of garbage bag the family used among all the piles of garbage and find the missing rings.
How about that?
They got a system in place now for this kind of thing, right? Because apparently this is happening all the time.
Yeah. Hey. Just a couple of follow-ups, though.
Yeah.
This woman had three diamond wedding rings.
That's what they say, yes.
Now, she's had multiple marriages, or the husband just likes to give her diamond rings.
I don't know. I recall a situation when I was getting married where we went to the jewelry store, my wife and I, to pick out wedding bands.
Yeah.
And the very nice sales lady was trying to convince my wife that she needed multiple wedding bands. Yes.
Get out of here.
Yes. That obviously she'd have the one she'd wear every day, but then she needed one, say, to wear to the beach.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I never heard of that.
Yeah. She must have misread our income level when we came into the store that day.
Listen, that's partly your fault. If you had announced initially that you worked in radio,
right,
she never would have suggested.
Yes. Yeah. We were dressed a little bit too well, I guess, when we came to the jewelry store. But So I'm guessing that this happens often, and perhaps some who have the means to do so will have multiple wedding bands.
Fair enough. Because as you point out, Mr. Wiggins and team, helped another woman to find her wedding rings.
Rings as
plural.
Well.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So it's so it must be a nice area where where these folks are living.
Must be.
And Houston Rockets star James Harden Gordon is having an MVP type season, and that continued last night as he scored 38 points in a 19-point win over the Milwaukee Bucks. But arguably his top highlight of the evening occurred after the contest was over. After the game, Harden took the game ball, signed it, and walked over to a woman sitting courtside. He handed her the ball as he sat down next to her, and they chatted for a few minutes and smiled for some photos. The woman had just turned 100 years old, and Harden told ESPN that he wanted to be sure to do something special for her, saying that he, quote, was happy to give her the game ball and tell her how blessed she is and that I am for meeting her.
Good story.
Yeah, that is good stuff. And he's having an amazing season.
I was just taking
a look at some of his stats. So he switched over from this year from a shooting guard to point guard.
Yeah.
So he's not only leads the team as one of the top scorers in the league with like 29 points a game.
Triple-double master.
Right. He also leads the league in assists with like almost 12 assists a game. And yeah, and he has like 9 rebounds a game too. So he's setting some serious records this year.
And you know, that there's different levels, I think, of efforts that you can make as a celebrity / pro athlete.
Right.
He could have just signed the ball and handed it off and walked off. He could have just signed it, maybe a quick hug and walked off, but he signed it, gives her the ball, sits down and talks with
her. Has a little chat with her,
It's just a nice effort, extra effort there by James Harden.
Very cool.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, an Italian rescue official, says a number of people have been killed after a hotel was hit by an avalanche in the Abruzzo region. Rescuers battled overnight to reach the hotel as a snowstorm and blocked routes made access difficult. Rescuers say at least 20 tourists and 7 staff had been inside the hotel when it was hit by the avalanche. A high-rise building in Tehran engulfed by a fire collapsed today, killing dozens of firefighters and injuring some 75 people. The disaster struck the Plasco building, an iconic structure in central Tehran just north of the Capitol's sprawling bazaar. President-elect Trump will nominate former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue to serve as Agriculture Secretary, completing his cabinet appointments as he prepares for his inauguration tomorrow. Trump interviewed a raft of candidates before settling on Perdue. Meanwhile, Trump's choice to head the EPA, Scott Pruitt, defended his record against harsh questioning from Senate Democrats while getting help from Republicans who back his bid to head an agency he has sued more than a dozen times. Pruitt reiterated his view that the EPA has overreached. He also said the climate is changing.
Science tells us that the climate is changing, and then human activity in some manner impacts that change.
But Pruitt added that his opinion on global warming is immaterial. The defending men's champ at the Australian Open is out. Novak Djokovic fell to the 117th ranked player in the world in 5 sets today. Dennis Istomin told the crowd he kind of felt for the favorite.
First of all, I feel sorry for Novak. I was playing so good today.
The match took 4 hours and 48 minutes. And with the Super Bowl in sight, it's time for those silly sports bets between politicians. The governors of Georgia and Wisconsin have set the terms for their friendly wager on the Falcons-Packers game. If the Falcons lose, Georgia will send off some Coca-Cola, chili dogs from the Atlanta restaurant The Varsity, peach pies, peanuts, and 2 six-packs from Creature Comforts Brewing. Wisconsin counters with 2 six-packs of Leinenkugel, chocolate, honey, a pair of glasses for old-fashioned cocktails, and assorted cheese, crackers, and sausages.
Well, the governor of Georgia is probably cheering for the Packers because that is a much better deal than Georgia. Coca-Cola and some chili dogs. I mean, come on. Packers are already Leinenkugels, sausage, cheese. I'm telling you.
Not even close.
No, Governor of Georgia is cheering for the Packers. He wants that deal from Wisconsin. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. A dating site that matches singles who support President-elect Trump is enjoying a spike in membership ahead of Inauguration Day tomorrow. TrumpSingles.com has racked up around 24,000 members since its official launch in June. David Goss, the site's founder, told FoxNews.com that membership jumped by about 5,000 after Mr. Trump's victory in November. And another wave of new members has just signed up to 6,000 past couple of days. The site, which aims to, quote, make dating great again, was set up by Mr. Goss, a Republican, when he saw the bitterness that accompanied last year's presidential election. TrumpSingles.com, not the only dating site to emerge, by the way. Maple Match helps Americans fleeing the Trump presidency find a soulmate in Canada. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio.